Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
The 12-day war has officially ended. Donald Trump is talking about talks with Iran. Is this going to impact the Abraham Accord one way or another as we try and figure out what on earth is going on, and as the dust clears, or rather the smoke clears, what will the new Middle East look like? Professor Kobe Michael is a senior researcher at INSS and MISGOV Institute. A very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I'm good. Thank you.
Good.
Optimist.
Yeah, well, that is a good thing because, well, the war has officially ended. The smoke is clearing. And we're trying to figure out what this new Middle East is going to be looking like. Is it going to Iran has just suffered a major blow, symbolically and militarily. Does this impact on the American and Israeli ambitions of the Abraham Accord?
Yes, of course. First of all, with regard to the region, I think that we are after the 12-day war, we are in a safer, better region with a much bigger chance or probability for prosperity and security for the entire peoples here and the entire countries that are willing to be part of the new regional architecture, which is eventually led by the pragmatic Sunni Arab countries together mm-hmm. with Israel as a very major and substantial component of this new architecture. I think that at the end of the day, first of all, we still need historical and strategic retro perspective about the war. Although it is pretty understood that it was very meaningful and the achievements are very significant, and actually this war exposed the huge gap between the image of threatening Iran and the image of the bully in the neighborhood that threatened everybody, not only here in the region but even beyond the region. Even the United States of America, and the tiger of paper, okay, that we found at the end of the day, and right. I think that this is the worst strategic position that this regime, the Iranian regime, finds itself in the last five decades, and now we are talking about a very fragile and vulnerable regime that will be mostly occupied and concentrated on its own survival in its domestic arena, because there are, I would say, too many accumulated conditions that might enable the Iranian people to think about a change of the regime and even to do something in this regard. Right. And the current regime is very concerned about it. I think that now there is a bigger chance or probability that Syria and Lebanon will be the first candidates to join the Abrahamic Accords. Not necessarily officially. The official normalization might take time, but I think that due to the fact that Israel eventually saved and released Lebanon and Syria, okay, without Israel and without what Israel did to Hezbollah that ended in the collapse of Assad regime, Lebanon and Syria would have remained occupied by this resistance axis led by Iran.
Right,
in this regard,
right.
I think that Israel did a very, very important service to the Syrian people and to the Lebanese people. And right. I think that both people, the Lebanese and the Syrians, are willing and interested in broadening and elaborating on cooperation with Israel. And it might be, first of all, security cooperation, even if not official, as I said, because we have common security interests. Secondly, economic cooperation, be it with regard to energy. Both countries suffer from energy problems, and Israel can provide Syria and Lebanon with energy, with gas, like we do with Egypt and Jordan.
Right.
Water, Israel can contribute in this regard as well. Israel is, I would say, a superpower in global scale with regard to desalination of water and, generally
yes.
speaking, the usage of water. And we can help them in this regard, agriculture, health, and even infrastructures. And I think that all of that will accelerate their official, I would say, official normalization.
Right,
and,
with Israel.
Joining
but what,
the, yes.
One of the concerns that I have is I thought that part of the motivation for the Abraham Accords is the fear and hatred, no, maybe not hatred, but fear of Iran. Certainly that I understood that to be a motivator from Saudi, for example. With Iran weakened, does that give Saudi Arabia less reason to normalize with Israel?
On the contrary, because I think that with all the respect to the American contribution to this war
yes.
or to this campaign,
right.
I think that everybody, mainly here in the region, understands that Israel was the one that did the job,
sure.
the real job.
Sure.
That Israel eventually was the only country in the entire world that dared to fight directly the Iranians.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody dared to do that, even the Americans, okay? The Americans came and bombed Fordu and Isfahan and Natanz after something like 10 days that
right.
Israel opened the path or opened the way and did what it did in Iran. And I think that everybody here in the region understands what eventually is the real power that Israel has, what is the reliability that Israel has eventually. And I think that the Saudis, as well as some others, will be more motivated now to enlarge the Abrahamic Accords and to accelerate the normalization process. It is true that we still have the case of Gaza, which is still open, unfortunately. But I think that we are getting closer and closer to close this file as well. I think that our achievements, incredible achievements in Iran, provide us with, I would say, on the one hand, more flexibility, maybe more generosity on the one hand.
Yes.
And on the other hand, I think that the leadership of Hamas, be it the remained leadership in Gaza and the leadership abroad, they understand that
they have less options.
Lost.
Yeah, they've got less options. They,
of course,
Hamas
they lost.
Doesn't have the Hezbollah.
Of course,
doesn't have
they
Iran.
Lost main. Exactly, they lost their main provider and supporter, which is Iran, at least from the military point of view. They understand that Israel is very determined and very capable. And they understand that Israel is backed by the American administration. We are left with one problem that I hope that will be resolved as well, and this is Qatar, because Qatar is today the most influential player on Hamas, and unfortunately, the interests of Qatar with regard to Hamas do not overlap the interests of Israel, neither the interests of the Americans or the Egyptians with regard to Hamas and the Gaza Strip. We have to understand that the major interest or the leading interest of Qatar with regard to Hamas is to assure that Hamas will remain as an effective sovereign power in the Gaza Strip and beyond. Their interest is that Hamas eventually will gain control over the entire Palestinian system, which means over the Palestinian Authority as well. Right. And why? Because Qatar is one of the biggest supporters and providers of the Muslim Brotherhood, the political Islam. Hamas is the Palestinian branch of the political Islam, of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Do you think, regard, the focus will move now to Qatar, because we haven't seen, and we are really out of time, but yeah, it's just such an interesting conversation. We haven't seen Israel, the U.S. focusing on Qatar in the way that they should, calling it out. In fact, there's very little mention in news media, even social media, by Israel or anyone else about the Muslim Brotherhood. It's almost as though there's been this tacit agreement not to talk about it.
I think that both Israel and the United States, and mainly the United States, are wrong with regard to their attitude and approach towards Qatar. I think that the idea that the United States of America continues appeasing the Qatarians and refer to them as a strategic asset, mm-hmm, and they prefer not to pressure them and not to bring them to pressure Hamas, I think that this is something that doesn't work in favor of us or in favor of the case of Gaza. Okay, I really want to hope that this time the American administration will change its approach and will pressure Qatar in a much more effective manner, in a way that Qatar will be able to pressure the leadership of Hamas. And now I think after what we did in the Gaza Strip, they have been left with almost nobody there in Gaza. Mm-hmm. And I think that the center of gravity with regard to the calls, the resolution that are made, the decisions that are made by Hamas, moved to abroad, to the leadership of Hamas abroad. Now, right, where is the leadership of Hamas is located? In Qatar, in Doha.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I think that this is a very, very crucial issue, and I hope that it will be done by the American administration. And I assume that once it will be done, and with the wind that blows from, mm-hmm, Iran and the very successful campaign there, I hope that we will be able to close this case as well.
Let's hope. Professor Kobi Michael, senior researcher at the INSS and MISGAV Institute.